Extraordinary Terrestrials, Chapter 35, Lord Inn. Bud attempted to whistle as he hurried down Blueberry Lane on his bicycle. The airy sound emanating from his lips was nothing like a whistle, but it did help to ease the tension his surroundings gave him. Before the incident with Karen, Bud had passed the bog many times without giving it a moment's thought. The secrecy of the dense, shriveled, untouched, alien wall of vegetation along the roadside had gone perfectly unnoticed. Now it took all Bud's nerve just to pedal slow enough to dodge the potholes. His heart pounded in his ears as every turn came with the expectation that something would come leaping and flailing out of the trees. The trees themselves reminded Bud of little gnomes or demons reaching for him with eagerness. Tripp's friend had told Gramps that the bog ate Karen, for goodness sake. "No," Bud murmured, refusing to let such frightening thoughts take hold. Today was a good day. His favorite day. Saturday. Gramps had let him go out for a ride on his bike, not realizing he'd travel this far. Nana would have kept a closer eye, but she worked the late shift the night before and wouldn't be up until noon or later. For this reason, Bud was in a hurry, as it was nearly 11:30 already. He'd gotten a late start to the day because of a minor existential crisis he'd underwent that morning while dressing. Inspired by the events of the day before, Bud had wanted to dress like a historian. But the historian hadn't been wearing anything all that remarkable, other than a pair of cat earrings and circular glasses that had nothing to do with history. So then Bud got to thinking of the Union soldier's uniform. His bathrobe was the closest comparison, but no Union soldier had ever worn a red and orange plaid bathroom into battle. He toyed with the idea of raiding Nana's closet to see if she had any blue wool dresses. It wouldn't be the first time, but he thought better of it. A gawky boy in his grandmother's dress conveyed absolutely nothing about historians. He did feel he was on the right track. As long as his wardrobe included something old, Bud would be satisfied. The perfect item came up as he was rummaging through one of many boxes of precious trinkets he'd stowed over the years. Gramps gave him an antique pocket watch for his birthday last year. It had belonged to some long-dead family member and no longer worked, but Bud had never gotten the hang of reading analog clocks anyway. It was the concept of the thing which now thrilled him. Not only was the watch old, it had been a symbol of the passage of time. A historian's perfect companion. As he came to a stop before crossing Hackmatack, the pleasant weight of the pocket watch swayed in Bud's jacket pocket. Perhaps Tripp would know how old it was. He could ask after hearing about Tripp's findings in the pages of that lady's journals. Bud dismounted his bike to cross the busy road. He didn't bother locking it up when he parked it next to Tripp's. He hurried inside, where he discovered his friend chatting with a lady. He halted. Stunned. She was surprising. She'd managed to capture Bud's attention when ladies rarely did. He wasn't exactly pleased to see the dark, mysterious, wild-haired creature who was leaning in to speak to Tripp. The way she looked at Tripp, and how Tripp looked back, incited envy and distrust in Bud.
"You should have woken me. I could have driven you this morning," she said.
"At 7 a.m? Tripp challenged. "You'd been driving for over a day. I wasn't about to disrupt your slumber."
"But it was well below freezing this morning. Not what I'd call biking weather."
Her shrill voice and southern accent did little to improve Bud's opinion of her.
"I rode my bike here," he cut in, feeling ignored.
Tripp's eyes left the girl's for the first time since Bud had walked in.
"Bud,"
he remarked. "Bud, this is my good friend Maddie, who I've told you about. Maddie, this is my good friend Bud, who is..." "Who are you today, Bud?"
I'm a historian, Bud replied, suddenly weary of having to explain himself. He was too self-conscious to show off the pocket watch in the presence of the attractive and no doubt judgmental lady. A historian, Trip frowned, scanning Bud's garments for some indication of his profession. Maddie was unfazed.
An honor to meet you, Bud, she stated, extending a hand to shake. Trip has mentioned you many times since I got back yesterday.
Being polite and mature, as Gramps had taught him, Bud shook her hand, but didn't pretend to enjoy it. Okay, he said, then turned back to Trip. Did you read the journals? Trip's frown turned into a wide-eyed dawning. The journals! I forgot. He looked to Maddie, who was entirely puzzled, then back to Bud, who was entirely unimpressed. How could he forget something he'd been so intent upon discovering the day before?
You haven't even looked at them? Bud asked.
Well, I had an unexpected visitor and got kind of... Trip glanced at Maddie, softening his tone. Swept up.
What journals? Maddie butted in.
I was telling you about the trip Bud and I made to the Historical Society, Trip prompted. To find out more about Jack Caron.
Jack Caron? Do you mean John...
Churchy actually mentioned a Jack Caron who lived near the bog, and the historian confirmed it. Turns out, he had a friend stay with him, briefly, and she was a mute, and all her conversations were written down. The lady at the Historical Society let me scan all the pages, Trip explained. Bud, feeling out of the loop, tugged on Trip's sleeve.
Who is this Jack guy? He asked. Why do you want to know about him?
Maddie turned to him, meeting his eyes.
We found his body in the bog last summer, she said, without a single hesitation. The night before Caron tried to burn it down. What?
Bud did and didn't want to believe her. Maddie, Trip scolded.
What? He asked, she defended.
She's lying, isn't she? Bud was not amused. No, actually, for once she isn't.
Hey,
Maddie frowned at Trip.
Excuse me for not advocating censorship.
You really did find his body? Bud pressed. This story was even better than he thought.
Did you leave it there? Can you show it to me?
Trip held up a finger. Yes, and...
No,
Maddie completed. It was Bud's turn to frown. This friend of Trip's was a constant hypocrite. First she claimed she didn't approve of censorship, and now she refused to let Bud see a dead body. He found her thinking to be erratic and unjust.
No fair, he cried. I found Caron, why can't I see a dead body?
We left it where it was, Bud, Trip explained, but it isn't there anymore. It vanished.
Like many things have a tendency to do in the bog, Maddie muttered.
Hey!
Churchy called from the back room. Bud took the customary 2 steps back in preparation for the old man's pronunciation of the letter P. He appeared, hobbling to a grinning Maddie.
It's my girlfriend. How you doing?
He gave her an overzealous pat on the shoulder. Bud saw her wince, but she held her ground.
I'm just ducky, Churchy, she replied. How are you?
You back from Nolens?
He asked, discarding her question.
That's right, I'm back from Louisiana, she replied.
Rustin, not Nolens, Churchy.
Not Nolens.
Churchy nodded and adjusted his cap.
I passed my kidney stone last week.
About time, if you ask me.
Maddie's brow furrowed with concern.
I hope it wasn't too bad.
Awful, just rotten,
the old man gestured to Trip.
Tresart, he knows.
Trip nodded. Yes, very bad. Bud was brimming with impatient questions.
So what happened to the body?
He exploded. The 3 adults noticed him.
The hell you talking about?
Churchy inquired.
Dunno,
Maddie said to Bud with a shrug. He realized she was answering his question, not Churchy's. Trip placed a finger on his lips, requesting that Bud keep things under wraps while in the company of the elder. Bud concluded that Trip and Maddie's brains were connected in some way. It upset him because it meant he knew Trip less than he thought he did. Who had he befriended these past few months? He'd known only the Trip without Maddie. Now Bud was forced to accommodate this new character, who he didn't care to know in the first place.
Right, Tree has work to do, So out you going unless you're buying candy.
Churchy waddled to the back of the store to rearrange the fish bait that few dared to buy. As an afterthought, he called out,
And welcome back, my dear.
Bud took Churchy's recommendation to heart and slapped the first candy bar he found onto the counter. Maddie snickered in line behind him.
What?
He asked, betraying his temper in his raised tone.
No, it's just that we both had the same great idea.
She held up the exact candy bar Bud had chosen. Don't you already have that candy bar in your collection? Trip asked. Bud felt his cheeks getting hot. They were mocking him. It only worsened things when he realized he didn't have any money to buy the candy bar. Dejected, he put it back.
Change your mind?
Maddie stepped in to pay for hers.
He's right, I already have that candy bar, Bud stated, making as if to leave. His excitement for the day had been ruined.
Wait, Bud! Trip raised a hand. I'll look over the journals tonight and let you know what I find. And the next warm day we have, we can try to find Jack Karen's cabin, the three of us.
Oh, I like that idea, Maddie chimed in.
Bud regarded the two adults, conflicted. He liked Tripp's idea too, but did it have to include her?
Fine, he replied. I'll run it by Gramps and Nana.
He's in an odd mood today, Trip commented after the boy had left. He's not usually so cold. Maddie smiled. She could think of a reason for Bud's behavior.
Jealous, she said.
What? Trip asked for clarification. Maddie chose to provide none.
I like him,
she said, resting her crossed arms on the counter as Trip rang up her candy bar.
He holds his ground.
His grandparents are his legal guardians, aren't they?
Trip frowned. How'd you know?
Let's just say his independence and attention-seeking is all too familiar.
Right, I suppose the two of you could have plenty to talk about, Trip stated. With an alarmed look, he then seemed to realize what he'd said. I didn't mean that you're attention-seeking.
Oh, but I am,
Maddie admitted with a sly grin. She watched the boy wobble away on his bicycle down Blueberry Lane.
Though I'm not as bad as I used to be.
Bud certainly reminded Maddie of herself in some ways, and they certainly did have plenty to talk about, but she could also see why the boy had become attached to Trip. If anyone was coping with a sense of abandonment, she realized with guilt, it was Trip.
So he's been your partner in crime while I've been gone?
She asked. The words provoked her own kind of foolish jealousy, which she pushed away. Well, never the degree of crime that you and I tend to get pulled into, but we've developed a rapport. He peered behind Maddie, looking for his boss. Churchy, you want me to put these extra boxes of oil back in storage? They waited for the old man to reply.
Yeah?
Trip nodded, taking it as a yes, and proceeded to lift the three cardboard boxes. When piled in his arms, they exceeded his height and obscured his vision.
Do you need a hand? Maddie asked.
I got it, he said through the cardboard that was pressed against the side of his face. The three boxes teetered as he walked. Maddie watched him, impressed not only by his strength, but his ability to open the door to the back room using only his feet. She caught herself staring. As the door shut behind him, she heard a subsequent crash. It made her jump, though she didn't know why she hadn't expected it. Silence followed.
Trip?
I'm okay, he called back. Maddie breathed in relief, then laughed a little. She'd actually been worried.
Any spills? She asked.
Churchy strode to the back room door, wiping his hands on a cloth. Just me, Trip replied. Maddie heard a grunt from Churchy as he helped him back to his feet. No oil spills. He'd been showing off, carrying all those boxes. Maddie smirked and realized as her pulse slowed back to normal that a lot of this had been a test. When she'd left, her time at home in Louisiana had been a means of weighing her feelings. There was that saying, Absence makes the heart grow fonder. Maddie didn't believe that. She felt absence made the heart reconsider, and during her time away, she'd considered and reconsidered over and over again who Tripp was and what he meant to her. She'd also considered and reconsidered what she meant to Tripp. Truth be told, Maddie knew she could happily spend the rest of eternity in his company. She'd spent 5 years already in a harmonious existence with her friend, and she figured Tripp would gladly remain her friend for the rest of eternity. But that was just it. Maddie knew she was the first real friend Tripp had ever had. Before meeting her, he'd led a solitary, introspective life. He'd avoided things which would typically disrupt his psyche. Things like romance. Maddie figured now was no different. He'd allowed himself a friend. Maddie had made many friends before and after meeting him. She'd been making friends her whole life. Some were very close, but none were like the bond she had with Tripp. None even knew much about the bond she had with Tripp. She kept it quiet, and she wasn't sure why. Toying with the candy bar she still hadn't eaten, Maddie leaned against the checkout counter and examined the tiny world surrounding her. She'd spent so much time in this little hardware store. There were hundreds of excellent conversations she'd had with her friend in this room. Maddie's other friends, who she'd lost considerable touch with since her academic hiatus, had no clue how much time she regularly spent in this hardware store, chatting away with the boy behind the counter, the little fellow tidying the shelves, the young man cleaning up the mess he'd undeniably made. This space, like Tripp, was sacred to Maddie. Perhaps that's why she kept him as her own sweet secret. A covetous part of her didn't want Tripp's friendship with her to be spoiled. It was the same covetous part of her that kept her from spoiling it herself. They could have eternity in the same harmonious existence, as long as she told him nothing of her feelings. It was getting harder. Now in his company again, the true test was occurring. Most things he did only reinforced her attraction. Because Maddie didn't know Tripp's feelings, she had a terrifying shred of hope every time his eyes lingered on her face, or their hands brushed, or some other silly encounter that could mean absolutely nothing. She glanced at the back room door, hearing several bottles of engine oil being picked up and placed back in their boxes. He could feel the same. She closed her eyes hard, trying to decide whether or not to entertain the idea. Everything could change. That was the scary part. How did people write like that back then? Maddie marveled, reading over Tripp's shoulder. She could tell it made him anxious to have her looming over him as he read the words of a long-gone woman. She peered at the tiny spiraled scrawl.
You never learned cursive in school? He asked.
Well, sure, she replied, but they never actually made us write with it past third grade.
Valid point.
Not only was her tight penmanship difficult to discern, Hecate's words were hard to piece together. Her conversations seemed disjointed and cryptic, without the other side. Maddie thought of talking to a ghost no one else could hear.
Whatever happened to the truth? I thought you were an advocate for that.
Maddie had an image in her mind of what Hecate had looked like. Sculpted the same way the woman had sculpted her letters, words, sentences. Strong, handsome, hardened, yet elegant. She had no way of knowing how accurate this image was, but Maddie sensed she was correct.
Thank you.
Extraordinary Terrestrials is written, read, and recorded by Miriam Rimkunis. All piano music was written and performed by Jonas Rimkunis. All public domain organ music was performed by John Rimkunis. All other music was written and performed by Miriam Rimkunis. Needless to say, all rights reserved. Tune in every Thursday for the next chapter. The Mockingbird heard at the beginning of this chapter was recorded in New Jersey by free sound user Hargis Sound. A link to their recording is in the show notes. If you like what you hear, please leave ratings and reviews for Extraordinary Terrestrials on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or SoundCloud. You can also follow the podcast and tell your friends on Facebook and Twitter, as well as the website, extraordinaryterrestrialspodcast.com. Lastly, go outside! Perhaps this segment is getting a little tiresome for some listeners. Being ordered to go outside can seem naggy if one doesn't know where to start. The National Park Service can help with that. Chances are, if you live in one of the 50 United States, you live near at least one national park. Just visit www.nps.gov to find out which one, or to show your support for the National Park Service. At the very least, go outside! Thanks for listening. Thank you.